Terry, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Having my cup of coffee this morning, getting ready to start rolling for the day.
I know you were, well, you were out rolling yesterday.
I was. There were two Martin Luther King Day celebrations, one in Carbondale and one in Mount Vernon, and they were well attended and really had some great things to say. It was a nice celebration at both places.
And of course, a different type of work. Well, you know, when we get back into session here right now, I mean, since you kind of know the temperature of Springfield, what effect did the November election have, and what could you feel starting last week with the new people coming in, like David Severn, and on the list goes? Has there been a change, at least mood, tone in Springfield as a result of November?
I think so. I mean, I'm not sure if it's because I'm going in this time, you know, with more with my feet under me than 2 years ago. But certainly there are, I believe, 21 new members. And both sides of the aisle are, the tone is, let's get this done. You know, whatever it happens to be, whether it's the bill that we'll each be working on individually or whether it's the budget. And it was a good step forward to just see President Cullerton and Leader Redonio working on a budget themselves. I think their attitude was, if Speaker Madigan doesn't want to get on board with one, we'll put one together, and then he can explain to his chamber why he's not participating.
At this point, I am kind of curious, because the Senate has a plan. Mm-hmm. Does the House have a budget?
Well, the House has had budget proposals on both sides of the aisle. The budget proposal that Leader Durkin filed last year, I believe he did two separate ones. They never came out of rules. And then, of course, House Speaker Madigan had several proposals, but one of them, of course, was the $40 billion out-of-whack budget. So the proposals that we've seen in the House side have either always been little piecemeal appropriations bills that were kind of smoke and mirrors to put us out on Front Street with votes, no votes on appropriations that were necessary but not balanced, or a totally out of balance budget bill that was never going to pass. So we're still waiting for one that is negotiated on both sides. Now, the one coming out of the Senate, we have some problems with, and one of those is one of the revenue streams for that bill is a soda tax, and that's just not acceptable to our region, because we have Coca-Cola and PepsiCo.
All right. It's a penny an ounce?
It's a penny an ounce, but it's a penny an ounce on almost every beverage that you could think of. So not just, you know, you go to the convenience store and open a 2-liter bottle of Coke. This, in my view, it's any kind of a beverage that isn't plain water.
Right.
So if you go to, you know, if you happen to go to a bar and you get a soda out of the little, you know, dispenser where they push the button and give you your soda, it could be flavored waters. It's anything that has any kind of sweetener or sugar in it. So that's so you're talking. I think I saw someplace that maybe a case of soda would go to like $17 a case.
All right. But you've got this, you've got the property tax fee freeze proposal, you have a corporate income tax from 5 to 7, you've got a personal income tax that goes all the way to 5, you've got borrowing $7 billion. When you look at this, and this is according to published articles, the Chicago Tribune specifically, when they went down the litany of items that were looked at, and in large, stopping all future retirement plans for future legislators, mm-hmm. when you look at this as a whole, it's such a big, huge hairball of items. I don't see it going through as is. It seems kind of, especially the large jump in the personal income tax, it looks as though it's a negotiating standpoint. That's the way I looked at it, even though I know both Republican senators and Democrat senators worked on that. It still looks like a negotiating point because the numbers are so big.
Yeah, it's, you know, it, the encouraging part of it is that there is conversation where we are negotiating. You know, on the House side, we don't see get to see very much negotiating. We see bills thrown down in front of us that says the version from the speaker that comes out is, here's the bill, we're in the supermajority, like it or not, this is what you get. That is the speaker's version of negotiation. On the Senate side, they seem to be a little bit more amenable to, well, why don't you like this? And then there is a little bit of movement. We just don't see that when it comes to budgets on the House side. It gets very discouraging. But what I heard from new members of rank and file from both sides of the aisle on the House side is they're tired of that. So I'm hoping that rank and file members on the Democrat side of the aisle will begin to move the speaker to at least understanding that he has to be just a little bit more reasonable.
Did the fact that that Mike Madigan was reelected speaker, did that surprise you at all?
It didn't surprise me that he was reelected, because the numbers are, it only takes a majority. It did surprise me that some of the more conservative members who I know have been unhappy with the direction the House has been going, that they did vote for him, because some of them, I really thought some of them, especially deep Southern Illinois, would have voted differently. I have great respect for Scott Drury, and Scott at least took a step towards that voting for the speaker by voting present. So, because he wasn't going to vote for a Republican, but he didn't have another option on the Democrat side. So there were no other names thrown around from Democrats to vote for Democrats. I threw a couple names out there just to kind of spice things up a little bit with my friend Jerry Costello or Elaine Nekritz, both who would be very good leaders, but that never got traction.
Yeah, well, it's one of the interesting ones is because Brandon Phelps and I have been talking about it too. He says, I'm not going to run for speaker. And he's been there for a while.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I'm talking to him literally about this time last week, I think it was, and he's talking about, I'm not going to waste my vote. Madigan will squeeze you out too. If you don't vote when you're expected to, then bad things happen to your district. And you and I both know that that's a true story.
That's a danger. I mean, Ken Duncan is a perfect example. I didn't agree with Ken on a lot of things, but he was very helpful when you did agree on things, because he voted his district, he voted his mind, it's a struggle to take the hard road, and I understand that. But I was surprised, because we just saw what happened in this last election. The folks who attach their name to Speaker Madigan are gonna pay for it politically down the road, not just with commercials and mailers and things like that, but this region does not want the speaker in there anymore. So, it's a little bit easier for me, because obviously I'm on the Republican side of the aisle, but for some of the folks deep south who did vote for Speaker Madigan, they're going to have to answer to their districts for Madigan, because their districts don't want him.
We're going to have another short-term budget. We're going to have another stopgap measure.
Well, it's possible. I hope not. I would like to see a fully funded, balanced budget, truly balanced. If we're going to see truly balanced, then we're going to see some of the ugly things that we see in the Senate version. And not everyone's going to like what we, what may come out of that. But, I think we all respect and trust our colleague who just left, Senator Luchtefeld, and he's been very clear that we can't just cut. We may have to tax, and we're going to have some reforms. And I do like the idea of not having legislative pensions going forward. I think that every Republican member who came in, both with my class and this most recent class, I believe that they all waived their legislative pensions. I know.
Well,
I did.
I can tell you that David Severin did.
Yeah, I'm not certainly in recent years, do not believe that legislators should get pensions going forward. It's supposed to be a part-time job. No, it's I really kind of say that tongue in cheek down here because our districts are so big, you can't do this part time. You know, it has to be full time. But, you know, I asked Representative Soto from up north, I said, now, how many counties do you have? And she said, well, I have Cook County. And I said, then I laughed. I said, well, how many streets do you have? She literally has like five streets.
Right.
I have five counties.
Yeah.
But that being said, the majority of the members, you go there. It's supposed to be a temporary part-time job because you're reelected every 2 years. So in essence, you're getting rehired every 2 years. So why should you get a pension? And if we believe in term limits, then you're only going to do 10 years. So should someone get a pension for 10 years? I don't think so.